If you have a story that you don't fit in much of anywhere, this episode is the ticket. My guest, David Beers, shares his story of a family, a school, and a town where he did not fit in. On top of that, his experiences include childhood emotional, mental, physical, and sexual abuse. As an adult, he married a woman, had a child, divorced, remarried, and finally came to that moment when he couldn't hide the real him any longer. The high point of his story is when he shares how he went from totally feeling like an outsider in every area of his life to feeling unique, special, accepted, and appreciated. Now David lives his life for himself and is excited about all the opportunities to self-express in ways that he has never known. Hello, David Beers, and welcome to the Authentic Gay Man Podcast. I'm really glad to have you here.
And I'm really happy to be here. I've been looking forward to this.
Yeah, I have been too. I know that you have a great story to tell. Not great in that it's a happy story, but great in that it's a story that needs to be told. That's what I mean by great. Yeah, so, David, why don't you tell the listeners how you and I came to this point of recording a podcast together?
Well, I don't know, about 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago, 2 years ago. I don't know. It's been a minute. I was in a process of kind of working through some issues that I've been dealing with. And I found this men's personal growth spirituality group. And they had a summer boot camp kind of thing during the quarantine. So it gave me several times a week to interact with people. I'm a very extroverted person, and I love engaging with people, talking to people, being in the midst of people. And so you were the one of the people there, and you just had this quiet sense of spirituality about you. And I had signed up for a program in another thing, and you had done that too. And so that kind of connected us. And then you went away for a while, and you came back. But then I started reaching out, and we just started having conversations. And you always had this just calming personality. So that when I talked to you, I just, you know, felt this great spiritual vibration, and it just made me feel good. Now, when I saw you on the Zoom screen, you were sitting at your desk. And so I had a certain image of you. And then when I met you in Austin and you were this big, tall person, I was really surprised. But, you were just the same in person as you were over the Zoom screen. So it's been really great having you in my life. And having you share my journey.
Thank you, David. Thank you very much. That means a lot. I really appreciate that. You know, you just acknowledging that, you know, when I showed up in person, I was the same person that you'd seen on the videos. I don't know that anybody, I've never had anybody refer to me as quiet before, but I love that. And I'm feeling you're in some feelings right now. I'm feeling that. Just very, very honored. Very honored that I can see that you feel a sense of safety here, and it's okay to be vulnerable. And I'm glad about that. So take a deep breath.
I'm good.
And so I'd like to know what being an authentic gay man means to you.
Oh, wow. That has been my life journey. But at this point in my life, I think it's not only accepting who I am fully, but continuing on the journey of discovery so that every day I turn a corner with my self-understanding and I find something new to celebrate. It's loving myself and loving the person that I've been, the person that I am, and the person that I'm becoming, and living that truth and not living in shame or doubt or guilt or fear. But just living my life in the moment, in the present, in the now, and just celebrating everything that happens, knowing that somehow is contributing to the person that I am becoming as I live out my life truthfully and unafraid in the world that I inhabit.
That is absolutely beautiful. Thank you so much. You know, when I started this, it never dawned on me that I was going to be the recipient of so many men really enlightening me about what it means to be an authentic gay man. And it's just been epic. It's been, because everybody comes up with a different answer and they're all right. And that's what's so beautiful about
it. The great thing about it is that everybody, and that's what I, in these groups that I belong to, I felt that we're on the path together and each of us has come from a different place and is going to a different place. But at that particular moment, we're on the path together, supporting each other and loving each other and encouraging each other. And that's been really important to me.
Yeah, it's been really important to me too. It's been a game changer, actually. I've throughout my life had that kind of support and those people on the path with straight people, but it's only been in the last couple of years that I've experienced that with other gay men. And it was a piece of my life that was missing without me even really knowing it was missing. It's been such an incredible gift.
Yeah.
So I feel you.
It is.
Absolutely. So let's get down to our big question for the day. Thank you for that. And that is, what is the biggest challenge that you've had to overcome in your life or are still in the process of overcoming?
When I was a little boy, I grew up in North Central Florida, and we moved when I was about 7, and I left behind my grandparents and my cousins and my aunts and uncles, and we moved off to where I grew up in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. And I felt isolated and disconnected and alone. My parents had their own issues and their own dysfunctions that people of their generation never dealt with emotionally or psychologically. And so a lot of their family trauma, their family dysfunction came into our family. And so I grew up in that very dysfunctional household where I was emotionally and verbally and physically abused and never felt loved or accepted by my father. I was used as an emotional surrogate for my mom. And I was the late bloomer, non-athletic, glasses wearing outlier in my family of blonde hair, blue eyed, athletic other children. And so I always felt different. I felt different from the people that I went to school with, different from the people in the town that I grew up that I grew up in, and never found my place. Never felt that anybody particularly liked me or cared for me. And in second grade, I made one good friend. And we're still in contact with each other. And we were friends all through school until we both moved away. And I recently found out that this person is also gay. And it made me laugh because I said, all those things we did together, we could have been boyfriends. When I was in fourth grade, this is all connected. I remember liking a certain boy and liking a certain girl. And not in a physical, sexual way, but just liking them, wanting to be friends with them. But I knew if I were friends with the boy, that would be bad. And so I kind of veered toward the girl. Although nobody really saw me that way. I think a lot of people picked up on my my inherent otherness. Shortly after that, I was in the Boy Scouts and we went on a camping trip. And the scout leader started fooling around with me and ended up orally assaulting me. And then that happened 3 more times over the next year and a half or so. And the thing is, I didn't realize at the time that is something. I mean, I knew it wasn't something that I should be doing, but I liked it. It felt good. But what happened is afterwards, other people talked about it, and I was even more ostracized than I'd been before. And the thing that really, really is painful for me at this point in my life to realize is, one, that even if people knew about it, nobody ever said anything to me, nobody ever came to me, nobody ever tried to figure out what was wrong with me. The same thing that would happen in my family. Everybody knew the situation in my family, and nobody stopped to try to help any of us. And that really, you know, you hear the story of the man lying in the road and the people walking across the street to avoid him. There was nobody that crossed the street to help me when I was a child. And it really was traumatic and confusing for me, to the point where my parents sent me to live with my uncle when I was 16 years old. And I lived with my uncle for 2 years, and then I went to college and lived on campus for 3 years. And so I basically left home at 16. I still was very confused, still feeling very strongly sexually attracted to men, but knowing that I had to have sex and be married to a woman. And in college, I got involved in the Methodist campus ministry. And the director there was very open and affirming and accepting of me as a person. We never talked about my sexuality issues, but he just made me feel like I belonged. And that's something that I've never felt growing up. And so that really kind of opened that door to me. And it kind of seemed to me that even though my experience growing up in the church had not been that this was an experience of religion that mattered and made a difference. And so that kind of was a pin in my life as far as my spiritual growth. And then I graduated and I worked in the computer industry. I was a programmer and an analyst, and ended up in Miami as a data processing manager at a light manufacturing company. And there was this person that I met who I had this very strong crush. And you know the kind of guy that it is. You know, he presents as straight, and you never follow through on anything. But he's also the one that keeps you close and affirms you emotionally. And at this point in my life, I recognized that he was a narcissistic person using me as a way to affirm him, because I think he knew I would never follow through. But then he'd throw things like, I love you, and that's kind of at me. And I was just like totally, totally blown away by it. And I went to seminary and became a minister. Got married to a woman, had a baby, got divorced, got married to another woman. And after 12 years of extremely toxic marriage, I finally left. And I finally said, you know, now is the time to quit fooling around, to quit walking to the edge of the cliff and looking over and being terrified you're going to fall into a pit, and just take that next step. In fact, one of the conversations I had with my therapist at the time is, you know, what are you afraid of? And I told him, I don't know what's going to happen. I'm afraid what's going to happen next. He said, what's the worst that can happen? I said, I don't know. He said, well, why not try? Why not move forward and stop being paralyzed? And so finally I came to the point where I was able to do that. And I left my second wife. I moved in with my son. And one of the first questions my son said to me, he goes, Dad. I go, what? He said, tell me. I said, tell me. Tell you what? Dad, tell me. I said, oh, then I'm gay? He said, yes, finally, thank you. And he'd had a very, difficult childhood with my marriages and his mother's marriages and all of that. And that really broke down a barrier between us, because then he was able to become vulnerable with me, and we've gotten a lot closer in our relationship as he becomes an adult, and we deal with each other not so much as parent and child, but as two people that know each other and love each other and accept each other. And that's been really significant to me. And so I started just kind of living my life as a gay man. I didn't know what to do. One of the first things I said in this other group that we were in is, I don't know how to be gay. I said, I mean, I know about the sex part. The sex part's easy because I've been thinking about it for, you know, all my life. But the emotional part, the living it out, being in a relationship in a different way where you're not just holding back, being afraid to tell another man how you feel about him. And so, I had never really had a real emotional relationship with another man. I've had sex several times, but also too, just being freeing myself to be able to have sex with men has been liberating to my soul, in the sense that I don't have to be afraid of it or ashamed of it or feel guilty about it. It's just part of who I am and living that out. It's part of my truth. My whole spiritual focus has shifted from a very traditional, I won't say conservative, but traditional kind of mainline Christian faith, into a very much more open and accepting and affirming kind of faith. I've been taking classes, and I'm finishing up my project. I'm taking what they call a certificate of sexuality and religion at Pacific School of Religion, which is out in Berkeley. So you know where they stand theologically. But it's been really wonderful. And to be in a diverse community of you know, men and women and trans people and you know, persons of color and people that are younger and older. And it's just been an amazing eye-opening experience. It just has, you know, pulled the curtains back on a whole another way of thinking. And so it's really been very exciting and invigorating for me to do this. And in the process, about 5 years ago, I moved back to Murfreesboro because my father died. And just to throw this on top of it, is that I wondered why I waited until he died. And I think deep down that that was one of my fears. One of the fears that was holding me back is that I was afraid of my father. I'd always been afraid of my father. And so I waited until he was at the end of his Alzheimer's to make this move in my life. And I came back to Murfreesboro, and I live here because my mom's in her 80s and needs somebody close by to help her out. So I've been doing that. I teach high school math now. And every day is an opportunity for me to kind of look at myself and say, okay, what do you need to let go of? What do you need to like put in the past? And what do you, you know, how do you focus on what's happening right now in your life? And I had to learn to forgive myself for having to take the time to get to where I am, knowing that, finally understanding that, and everything I went through up to this point has gotten to me where I am. And if I hadn't experienced that, then I wouldn't be where I am, to the fact where it's just, I think that I wouldn't have been ready at 20 or 25 or 30. I think that my emotional brokenness and my codependency and all those issues would have led me into a more self-destructive lifestyle if I hadn't been so in control of myself until I was ready to let go.
Yeah. Am I hearing you say that there's even a little bit of gratitude for your experiences? You didn't use that word, but I'm an empath, and I'm feeling your feelings right now. And when you talked about all of these experiences making you the man that you are today, I say this frequently. You know, I wouldn't want to relive those painful experiences, but I wouldn't trade for them either. Because without those experiences, I wouldn't be who I am. And at this point in my life, I very much love who I am.
Well, you know, I would not have been able to go to seminary as an out gay man. Would not have been ordained in the United Methodist Church 30 years ago as an out gay man. I would not have my wonderful son if I didn't marry his mother. Or, you know, I've reconciled with my second wife, not so much my first wife, but my second wife, we reconciled and have become the friends that we were when we first met. And, you know, the thing is that being with her gave me the stability I needed to continue to raise my son, but also the strength to leave the church that was extremely spiritually abusive and was not something that I had believed it to be before I went into ministry.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you have shared kind of a 30,000 foot overview of what your life has been. And it's been a full life and you've experienced a lot. I would love, with your permission, to go back and maybe unpack a few items along the way. Would that be okay?
That'd be fine. Sure.
Well, I think one of the significant things that you said was the camp counselor or the camp scoutmaster, whatever, I don't remember now the term you used, and how he took advantage of you. How old were you at that age?
I was about 10.
Yeah. Okay. And that went on for a period of time. How would you say, how has that played a role in your life? How has that affected the way you navigate life and affected? I mean, we usually take experiences like that and we make them mean something. And oftentimes we make them mean something about us. We go through an experience like that and we apply generally three meanings. It's a meaning that the world is, people are, and I am.
I do know that experiencing the reaction of my peers and those people around me, the bullying and the ostracization that I felt, as I believed it was, I said to myself, and this may or may not have been true, but I said, everybody knows, everybody thinks I'm a freak. Everybody thinks I'm a little sissy, a little, you know, a queer boy. And, you know, it made me very self-conscious, very insecure, very turning it back on myself and not celebrating the fact that it was okay to be different and explore it. Because I did explore a little bit, but I never was strong enough to break past that fear of total rejection.
So am I hearing you say that you're maybe the meaning was that you weren't okay?
Yes, yes, yes.
Is that what I'm hearing?
Yes. I always felt that. I always felt, you know, my relationship with my dad, I always felt like I could never satisfy, you know, make him happy. I never could do anything right for him. I was always getting criticized for the things that I did wrong and that, you know, I never lived up to anybody else in the family. And so that, you know, I was pretty much a failure.
And so how did that show up in your behaviors, David? Because we usually, when we have something going on like that, there's this whole compensation thing that we step into. It's human nature.
I went into the ministry. Everybody loves a preacher, right?
So that was your way of compensating for what you didn't feel like you had, that not enoughness, my understanding, right, was to find a means that you could step into a position that would give you a sense of meaning, a sense of enoughness.
Yes.
And how did that play out? You did indeed become a minister. How did that play out? Did it achieve what you had hoped that it would achieve when you embarked upon that?
In some ways it did. People liked me. I mean, I'm very, to be modest, I'm a very likable person. The thing that I get told is I'm so sweet, I'm so adorable, which is something that a gay man that you want to hear from other people. But, you know, I found my voice and I became a very good communicator. And so people liked coming to hear me preach. I'm a teacher. And so that was always a great part. But I was always resistant to the power structures. One of my professors in seminary said that I'm the kind of person that walks into a room, immediately looks for a wall to start pushing against. And so I didn't play the game very well. And so along the way, I made several people unhappy. And I can't handle conflict well. I mean, I guess I'm better at it now, but conflict has always been something that I've run away from because there's a lot of anger and fighting and yelling in my family. And so that's something that I try very hard to avoid if I can. And so when those kind of things happen, I just simply emotionally disconnect. And so the first church I went to was the church that my mom's family had been a part of. So that was kind of an outlier thing, in the sense that everybody there remembered my mom and my grandmother and my great grandparents. And so, you know, everybody loved on me, but after that, it was not the same experience. And that, and personal issues in my first marriage kind of blew up in my face and left me in a very dark place. And my first wife left. It really broke my heart because I was trying very hard. I will say this, and I've had a conversation with somebody about this several years ago, that I think my experience in ministry might have been better than what I experienced if I'd been able to serve authentically with integrity as my real self and not trying to show somebody the mask that I thought they wanted to see. And I think that's why my preaching resonated more than the other parts of my ministry, because when I was preaching, it was just me. I wasn't trying to put on any facade. I was just simply me connecting to, you know, the cosmos, the universe, God, whatever you want to call it. And so that part connected with people because I really meant it. I was very sincere in it. And other times I was really working very hard not to be somebody that they wouldn't like.
Yeah. Okay. I'm following you. I'm getting a little bit of an intuitive hit now, if I can articulate it. You know, we started off with the question, what have you had to overcome? And you have many things that you have had to overcome. And what the intuitive voice is saying, you know, all those things are things that are now locked in time in the past. They happen in a specific time. And this maybe is coming through for the first time. We always think that those are the things that we had to overcome. But what we've really had to overcome, and sometimes we continue to have to overcome, is what's left in the wake the wake of those experiences.
Yeah.
In other words, all of our interpretations of the experiences. Experiences are the experiences, and they're back there in their history, and they're water under the bridge already. Mm-hmm. We've endured those. We've gotten to the other side of those. And yet, oftentimes, our bigger challenge than the actual experience itself are all of our interpretations of those experiences. Mm-hmm. I would love for you to speak on that. Speak on the interpretations that do you feel like you have gotten all of those interpretations behind you as well? Or are those still things that you're being challenged with on some level and are still working on uncovering, unmasking, and rewriting the story of those interpretations? We can't rewrite history. We can't rewrite the experience, but we can rewrite our response to the experience.
Yes.
We responded a certain way when it happened, but we're still responding to it. All these years later, we're still responding to that experience. And that's where our power lies, is in our ability to change our response.
Yeah, I'm totally there with you. I think that the experience I've had over the last couple of years or so has really allowed me to embrace all those things, to embrace my queerness as not as something that that is wrong or not right or broken, but it's a differentiation of me that celebrates my uniqueness as a person. Because I'm not like you. I'm not like the other people in the group that we were in. I'm not like the people that I work with. I'm specifically uniquely me in this moment of time. And that's important because I make a difference in the lives of people that I'm around. And it really has allowed me to embrace that. And in fact, in my teaching, I'm out to my students. And a lot of the queer kids at school gravitate towards me and feel supported by me because I'm being authentic, and it makes a difference for them to see that in an adult. And so I really am happy that I'm able to do that, and happy that I'm able to celebrate my difference in relationships. I'm starting to take more risk and be open with people. I just had my real first in-person date since 2003. And that was a really fun time, you know, without any expectations, without any other thing than just being with another person and enjoying going out to eat with them and watching a movie and other things. It was very, very freeing, and just allowing myself to enjoy myself, to, you know, to participate in activities that I had always said, I can't do that. That's wrong. I don't want to do that. But freeing myself to be wholly myself. And I think the intellectual stimulation from my studies at PSR has really helped me to kind of put my religious experience, my spiritual experience, in a context that allows me then to get out of the box that other people built for me. And I think that's been the best part of the last 5-6 years of my life. When I came out, I said, you know what? I'm going to not let anybody tell me who I have to be anymore. And I'm not going to let the church, I'm not going to let my wives, my parents, I'm not going to let anybody tell me who I am. I'm going to figure out who I am and be who I am in the moment that I'm living. And so it's been exciting to be on that journey of discovery and really to look back and I think you're right, and recognizing those parts of me that have always been there that I never acknowledged, or I kind of said, well, that doesn't really matter. But it really does, and it really makes a difference. And I think that my life is so much better now, even though I still deal with depression, even though I still deal with anxiety. That's a physiological thing. That's that just was exacerbated. But the fact that I'm living my life in a way that I never thought possible 10, 15, 20 years ago, which is really exciting. And I can start to look at my life and imagine my dreams coming true. You know, I'm 62 years old. I'm going to retire in about 5 years, and thinking about how I can move towards being in a place when I retire and don't have to work anymore, where I can just go and do those things that are my passion and my joy, and continue to give my life, reaching out to people who have struggled like me, who have felt alone and afraid and isolated, and who need to hear that they are exactly the way they were created, to be perfect and without any kind of negative thing. And once they embrace that, their life will open up for them.
So that's beautiful. And I do want to unpack something because I'm getting it, but I want to make sure that my listeners are getting it. And that is, you started your story talking about how you just were an outlier and you didn't fit in anywhere. There was just this, I'm the only one like me type feeling. I don't fit in any regard, in any part of anything that life that's presented itself thus far. And now you're telling a story all these years later of embracing and celebrating your uniqueness. You took what was the painful part, the hard part, and you turned it into perhaps one of your superpowers. That's what I'm getting out of this story that you're telling. And I'd like to understand, how did you do that? I mean, I know you've gone through the story, but on that internal level, how did you how did you come from this mindset of, I don't fit anywhere, I'm the oddball, I'm the freak, I'm the weirdo, to I'm unique, I am special, I have something powerful to offer? How did you go? Because those are extremes of the continuum, and there's all this middle area in there. And you went through a middle area for probably a long time, but tell us how you got from point A to point B. What did you do? What did you think? How did you change internally that allowed you to, you're the same person in some regards. You're just operating from a different mindset. You're the same David that was the little boy that didn't fit in, but you've changed your mind. And when you changed your mind, you changed your life.
Absolutely. So
I want to hear how you changed your mind.
Well, I like to mention this conversation I have with my father. Not every part of my experience with my dad was horrible. He really did love me. He just didn't know how to be a father. My brother and my sisters look like my dad's and my dad's family, and my dad looks like his brothers and sisters, and I look like my mom's side of the family, which is okay because they're better looking people, but. I always felt that was a barrier between us because I didn't look like him. And so I said something about not looking like the Beers. And my dad goes, well, you're what the Beers look like now. And which really, I don't know if he recognized how profound that statement was, because it allowed me to step back and look at the way I've been thinking about it because, oh, that's right. That's right. My dad has a younger brother who has a son who's a year or two younger than me, and he's 6'4" and I'm 5'8", and his mother is from Scotland, and so he looks like his mom and I look like my mom. And so when we both lived in Miami, people that knew us both go, well, how can you be cousins? You don't look alike. And I said, well, we're cousins. We're not twins. So, we can be very different, but still be related to each other.
I have to ask before I forget, how old were you when Dad said, well, you look like what the Beers look like now?
I was in my 30s.
Wow. Wow. It was a defining moment, wasn't it?
Yep.
Defining moment.
But I really have to, okay, so. When I started this group thing that we did, I couldn't afford to, all the pricey extra modules. And so I said, what can I do, to kind of do this on the side? And a book was recommended, The Power of Now. I'm sure you've read that. It really kind of allowed me to step back and go, okay, the past, your past is kind of like a photo album that you look back, but you don't really remember that. You just get this snapshot of different things that happened, but the context and the feelings are not there anymore. It's just a picture. And the future is trailers of coming attractions, but sometimes the trailer isn't anything like the movie is. And so the only thing I have going on is right now. And how can I make the most of right now in a way that uses everything about me to do the things that I want to do and to set my life on a path that I want to go on? Because if the path I'm going on doesn't get me where I want to go, then okay, what do I need to shift that path so I go to where I want to go? And the only way to do that is to move where you are, take a step in another direction. Doesn't mean you have to, get to, if I'm going to Atlanta, I'm going to go southeast. But if I want to go to Dallas, I have to go southwest. And there's many places along the way I can change directions, but I have to change directions. And so I had to stop thinking about all the ways that I had stifled myself and restrained myself and told myself that I couldn't do what I wanted to do, and just say, I am going to do what I want to do. I am going to be who I want to be. And if people have problems with it, I'm not going to be around them. I'm not going to put myself in a situation where I allow their negativity to influence me. And it really has made a difference. It really has changed.
Well, it required you to let go of the past, didn't it?
It did. It did. And
not that, you don't have the memory still, but you've let go of the way it dictates your life. I say to my clients frequently, when we drag our past into our present, it becomes our future.
Right.
And there's a percentage of the world out there that's living in their past. They have drug it into their present. And I'm hearing you say that that was something that had to go in order for you to move forward.
When I was a little boy, I told you that we left Florida to move to Murfreesboro when I was about seven. I left Murfreesboro in 1984, and when I was in my mid-20s. And I lived in Florida for 34 years. And then I left Florida to come back and be with my mom. And my brother goes, is this something you've always dreamt of doing? I said, no, this is the last place I ever thought I'd go back to. But I do know a couple of things, and this will tie into the putting the past in the past, is coming back to Murfreesboro has allowed me to work through the negative experiences and feelings I've had about the place, knowing it's not the place. And the people that were there are no longer here. The people that were there aren't the same people they were. I've gone through a process of reconciling with the spirits of the land and this place, so that I continue to let go of my feelings of anger and animosity to a location that had nothing to do with my experiences. But I also know that once I'm through helping my mom, that I'm not going back to Florida. I went back to Florida to recapture what I thought was important in my life. And my time in Florida was significant, and I celebrate that. But I want to move to someplace different, where this new David can live his new life in a way that he can celebrate without worrying about everything, without packing that extra bag for the past.
Beautiful. I love it, David. I love it. So if you were going to drop some wisdom on the listener about there, because your story, although your story is unique to you, there are some elements of your story that are shared by many of the listeners out there. There are so many of us that had a dark period of our lives where we didn't feel like we fit in anywhere. And you've come to this place where you have found your place. You do fit in now. When you choose to fit in where you choose to fit in. And you have come to the other side of your challenge in many, many ways. What wisdom can you share with the listener on how they might do what you've done?
It's so all
that person, that person that's still struggling with I don't fit in.
Right. First thing you do is you stop. Just stop. One of the things that I tend to do is I tend to get caught up and I get moving in a direction or get thinking, and it's just all this boom, 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 boom. Just stop. I had to stop. And I had to decide that what was going on in my life, as much as I had tolerated it before, as much as I allowed it to control me before, that I couldn't continue to be that way. I just had to stop. I had to stop. And I had to say to myself, if I don't matter to anybody else but to myself, that's enough. That's important enough. So I think the first thing you have to do is realize that you matter, and you matter because you are who you are, and that you're important, and your ability to care for yourself is the most important thing that you can do in your life. Once you recognize that and provide that emotional boundary for yourself, so that you are only allowing in those things that nurture and upbuild you, and you're doing that intentionally for yourself, and then you can begin to see how the fact that you perceive yourself as so different that you didn't fit in. But imagine I'm in my apartment, my walls are still that kind of brownish beige color they paint it, and it's just very plain. But then I've been in places where they put a little tiles, a little mosaics with little pieces of of tile of different colors, and each part is different and unique in a different shape, a different color, but all together they make the larger picture. And I'd always believed in a higher power. I always was connected to the universe. I've had very deep spiritual experiences. So I always was aware of that part of myself. But what I began to accept is that I mattered in the universe. I always believed that, you know, when I couldn't love myself, that God loved me, that Jesus loved me, in the context of my faith tradition, but that I matter to the universe because I was here. So if you learn to step back and know that you're important to yourself and to the universe, and the universe has put you here for a particular reason to be who you are, then you can begin to celebrate the fact that you're that special piece of tile that fits in right where you're supposed to be to make that huge cosmic picture that is beauty beyond imagination.
I would call that self-love.
Yep. Yep.
Yep. Wow. Beautiful. Thank you so much for that. Well, I loved your story. I loved your courage. And I know that it's going to have an impact on those who are blessed enough to listen to it. Do you have anything else you'd like to say before we move into rapid fire questions?
I just wonder what you have left to ask me that I haven't already talked on about, but yes, I'm ready.
Okay. So question number one, when was the last time you cried in front of another gay man? Aside from right now.
I've been crying the whole time, if you're wondering. I think in Austin, because I really don't have a lot of gay friends. And my date, we didn't cry.
Okay. Beautiful. What is the one thing that you clearly need to take action on in an effort to be even more authentic?
To stop worrying about the things that I don't have and celebrate the things that I have.
Beautiful. And final question, if you could go back in time and say anything to your younger self, how old would you go back to and what would you tell him?
Holy cow. Because there's about 5 or 6 places. I think I go back to that 10-year-old boy and tell him that what happened to him was not his fault, and that he is special and that he is loved. And while his parents can't love him the way he wants to be loved, that they do love him, and that he is somebody that matters to them, to the world, and that his life is good.
Beautiful. Thank you, David. So I would just love to let you know that it's been a true pleasure to have you as a guest on the podcast. I love the vulnerability that you brought. I'm sure some of the listeners have picked up on the choked up voice, and but yes, he has been emotional through a majority of the conversation today, and it's such a gorgeous example of vulnerability, and it makes me understand you better, and it makes me know you better, and it makes me love you better.
Well, thank you. I tell people I cry at tractor pulls and Walmart openings, but
yes. I'm a pretty sensitive soul myself, so I get it completely.
But like you said, I think my vulnerability and my ability to feel with other people is one of my superpowers.
I say that all the time. Vulnerability is my superpower. So we share that. You know, it's interesting how many people would say, you know, there's so many people that think vulnerability is weakness. How could that possibly be your superpower? But I continually say the people that think vulnerability is weakness are people that's never have experienced vulnerability, or they would know different.
Absolutely.
Because vulnerability is courage at its best.
Yes.
So thank you so much, my friend. I want to leave you with one thing, and that is to tell you that you are indeed an authentic gay man.
Thank you. Thank you. Thanks, Maddox.
Thank you.